Tony Blair, Britain's Prime Minister, says he has seen incontrovertible evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the attacks. NATO Secretary General George Robertson says he's convinced, but the Taliban has seen no such evidence and says it wants to before taking action. We talked today to two professors of international law, Ruth Wedgwood of the School for Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins and Hurst Hammond of the Fletcher School at Tufts University, raising just that question. Should the Taliban be shown the evidence?
Certainly think that it's appropriate to show them some kind of evidence. The U.S. has not been known always for telling the truth in the world, and I think that to demand that a country give someone up, we should be willing to put at least some cards on the table. Certainly I would not go so far as to compromise any security. The burden that we need to meet is not one of showing beyond a reasonable doubt that bin Laden committed these acts, but I do think there's a burden to show that he's responsible for something.
On a practical matter, how could you show them anything, the Taliban anything, that would not compromise some security level?
Well, the American public has been promised that we too will be shown evidence linking bin Laden to the bombings. I would think at the very least that the Taliban would receive that kind of information, which we're still waiting for.
Professor Ruth Wedgwood, what do you think about this?
Well, my concern is twofold. One is delay. There were negotiations with the Libyan government for long, about 8 years, to get them to agree to turn over the two suspects in the Lockerbie Pan Am 103 airplane bombing case. Finally, after years of negotiation, they agreed. But once you get yourself into one of these mare's nests, oftentimes you can't get out very easily. And it's a well-known tactic to use negotiations as an attempt to delay military action. I guess my other concern in that practical vein is that even as we speak, members of bin Laden's network, as well as senior members of the Taliban, are scattering and going across the border into Tajikistan, and even if they have to bribe a Russian border guard, going into Pakistan, into the Pashtun area. This is not a costless delay. And I do think, myself, that there's sufficient legal warrant for demanding that they give him over straight up. Number one, there's a new Security Council resolution from the United Nations that says that states must deny safe harbor to those who either commit or plan terrorist acts. So in that sense, there's an analogy directly to the Security Council's demand made in the Lockerbie case. And number two, under Article 51, right of self-defense, this is no ordinary criminal case. It's not a bank robbery. It's a man who was complicit and is still active in planning attacks. So his turnover is part of the measures of the inherent right of self-defense.
Professor Hurst Hammond, President Bush has said there's no negotiating here. We're not going to be talking with the Taliban about anything.
Well, we talk about everybody about anything. And obviously one doesn't want to drag the negotiations out in a way that will compromise our legitimate security interests. But I'm not convinced by Professor Wedgwood's argument that delay is necessarily something bad in this case. We did, after all, eventually get justice for the Libyans. Delay as opposed to acting precipitously may in fact build the coalition that we're attempting to build around the world right now even more strongly than we could have done. Of course, the Taliban are going to attempt to put themselves in the best position possible, but we need to identify much more precisely than we've done thus far exactly what our goals are. Is the goal to end terrorism in the world? Well, that's going to take a long time, and it doesn't matter where bin Laden's men are going in the next 2 weeks. Is the goal to overthrow the Taliban? Do we want to destabilize Afghanistan, or do we want to attempt to bring some more to that? How do we best do that? By dealing with the Taliban and attempting to make them more moderate, or by imposing demands that we really are unable to follow through on, except for the fact that, of course, we can bomb them anytime we want.
Ruth Wedgwood, what about that? You hear talk that this war against terrorism could extend 5 years, even beyond that.
Well, first things first, our immediate goal, to my mind, is to wrap up his network, the 4 or 5 or 10,000 people he trained in Afghanistan, as best we can. And the longer you delay, the less chance there is of doing that. Bin Laden is under indictment in the Southern District of New York Federal District Court. There's a speaking indictment describing his role. I don't think that one wants to share with the Taliban, who are themselves, if you like, a state harborer of terrorism, the nuts and bolts of how you made your case.
The indictment you speak of is for the Africa embassy bombings?
That's correct. It was the bombing of the embassies in Tanzania and in Kenya.
What about this issue? The Taliban, it's said, they seem to be almost desperate here. They want direct a direct dialogue with the United States. Is that asking too much, Hearst Hammond?
I don't think so. It's certainly no guarantee that they will get what they want, and nor do I think that we should give in to any of their demands or requests. But refusing to talk to them, frankly, seems to me to be simply leaving aside one potential resolution that would be in our favor without any great purpose. Certainly, Ruth Redgewood is right that occasionally delay can have a negative security or defense aspect. But I think that if one looks back at U.S. actions over the last 20 years, we've had many more problems in acting precipitously than we have in acting too late. And I simply can't imagine that a few days or a few weeks or simply talking to a government we despise, we talk with many other governments we despise, is a bad thing.
Well, Mullah Omar has already told us to go fly a kite. And my favorite example, it's a macabre example, of where delay cost us. I'll just harken back to the Gulf War. Remember that famous Primakov pause for peace, where former Minister Primakov was allowed to go see Saddam Hussein one last time just to see if they could persuade Saddam to stand down from his invasion of Kuwait.
The Russian foreign minister.
Correct. And in that interval, the UN Commission on Iraq's investigation later revealed, in that interval, Saddam took the time to weaponize his biological weapons, to put them into canisters.
And we also had the delay that enabled Jimmy Carter to go to Haiti and to negotiate a peaceful exit of the generals as opposed to an all-out invasion.
That's a much more benign context.
Well, obviously it depends very much on the circumstances, and I'm certainly not in a position, perhaps you are in a better one, to judge the military necessity of acting at this time. But as a matter of principle or policy, to say that we refuse to discuss anything with a country at whom we claim we're at war, I just think that's nonsensical.
Thanks to both of you. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Good to talk with you again, Ruth.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Hearst Hammond of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, and Ruth Wedgwood, Professor of International Law and Diplomacy at the School for Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins.